cracking up. They figured us out. I'm about to eat the ranch. We might eat the ranch. And they smell like Seattle Spirit when you cook them. But cook them well. They have worms.
We have a lot of data, the way we get data and analyze data. What we do know from looking at the data is, with the data is very clear.
I love that. I will love that for the rest of my life. The consultant told her, listen, when you talk homelessness, say data, 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 data. City council meeting opened with the guy who pretends to be the president of the Seattle City Council, Bruce Harrell.
People do not seem convinced that the employee hours tax strategy was the right solution.
Schadenfreude.
I'm having a distinct feeling of
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, are you having that too? I said he pretends to be the president of the Seattle City Council. What did I mean? This is the actual president of the Seattle City Council.
It is an act of war to invest in white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
Bunker, of course, meaning police station. The Bhagwan Sri Sawant stepped into the battle about the tax on jobs. Bruce Harrell has said people aren't thrilled.
People do not seem convinced that the employee hours tax strategy was the right solution.
No, they don't seem convinced that you guys have your head on straight. You're all lunatics, every single one of you, either bought off or a lunatic, or both, or incompetent lunatics who are bought off. I mean, it's maybe one of the three, or in some cases, all three of the three. I wanna, now known as the Bhagwan Sri Sawant, said the fight was what?
This fight was never going to be easy. In the face of a mass corporation misinformation campaign, a campaign of lies, and a campaign of attacks, we do have to fight back.
What were the lies? Bhagwan Sri Sawant, who uses public taxpayer dollars to print propagandistic signs to hang around the city, who imports people, literally imports street people to live in the city so she can get them tiny houses in which they can shoot up and sex traffic and take apart stolen bicycles, no questions asked. And in return, they support her councilship. And in return for that, she and her husband, this media reports indicate, fly around the country on the dimes of their donors, using illegal organizations that are not registered as lobbying groups or political groups or nonprofits or 527s or anything of the nature. They're just groups taking money. I want him, now known as the Bhagwan Sri Sawant, had some specific complaints about the process of getting the signatures to stop the tax on jobs.
Remember their vote today, next time the council member complains about legislation being rushed. In fact, the movement, including my office, was only informed about this backroom legislation agreement only a couple of hours ago.
Now, why would that be? Why do you think, Bhagwan Sri Sawant, that they would only inform you now? Well, because they didn't want you bringing in your hired thugs. Now, they haven't gone out and beaten up council members yet. They haven't beaten up opponents of your policies in public or admitted to it. But there's a lot of signs that people connected to what you call your movement are doxing people online. Lots of signs of that. There's absolutely a string of reports of people tied to your movement. Some in the media, some in social media, some said personally to me, some said by guests on this radio show, of people harassing folks who wanted to sign the No Tax on Jobs initiative. But Sawant, of course, the Bhagwan Sri Sawant, saved most of her input, if you want to call it that, for attacking people who create jobs.
Big business did not simply luck out in the tax codes. The reality is money is power under capitalism, and big business uses their immense power to rig the laws in their favor.
Yeah, okay, so you have the ability, Bhagwan Sri Sawant, to create some taxes. Why is this one not working? I'll tell you in a second why it's not working. Then she spoke about black magic. Well, that's a racist term. I don't want her using it, but she spoke about magic.
If the council repeals the tax on big business, where will the affordable housing come from? The council needs to answer that question, and they are not going to have answers because it's not magic. The answers are not going to come from magic.
Well, is the magic that is going to work this time, Bhagwan Sri Sawant? The Puget Sound Business Journal. The Puget Sound Business Journal did an all-in report on the costs of homelessness in our region. They didn't just stop at social services and housing. They included things like the times of cops, first responders, paramedics, hygiene, garbage cleanup, stolen utilities. They went all in. The numbers to address 11,000 people, $1.3 billion. Bruce Harrell, what did you say people said about the tax on jobs?
People do not seem convinced that the employee hours tax strategy was the right solution.
Yeah, well, guess what else? They know for a fact that you haven't plugged the hole. They know for a fact, Bruce, that you are fixing to import more street people with the, if you wanted to import street people, if you were a startup and let's say that you wanted street people, that you got funded by VCs and what are you going to do? We're going to bring street people in. Sally Bagshaw has created the perfect strategy to bring street people to Seattle. Now, if you're a new listener to the show, understand something. I don't call homeless people street people. I call street people street people. Homeless people encounter homelessness. They've run out of time on friends' couches. Their families cannot help them, and they're terrified, and they're scared to death, and they should be taken care of. It is our Christian duty to take care of them. In Seattle, there's beds. In Seattle, you want a bed, you get a bed. It's tougher for teens, but in Seattle, there's great groups that will get beds for teens, too, and will work them into consistent housing. That's homelessness. Sally Bagshaw wants to import street people. She wants to give people heroin. She wants to make you a drug dealer.
I have heard of some other models where the drugs are provided, and it's a public safety model because those who may not have the money to buy drugs are not breaking and entering to obtain whatever they need to buy, whatever it is they're using. So I would like to be able to just explore this, and not to say we're going to land anywhere on the issues, but part of what we're trying to do is to reduce crime as well.
There was the sting, Ocean's 11, and the Italian Job. But why rely on fiction when we have the real thing? The Todd Herman Show presents today's episode of The Great Political Swindle.
People do not seem convinced that the employee hours tax strategy is the right solution.
I told you. I told everybody listening to the radio show. They're going to try to buy the drugs. I told you. Here's the swindle. You create a massive, massive problem with street people getting high in every corner of our city. You have a meth problem that the DEA has to swoop into and make 80 arrests. You have people shooting up in vans, in RVs, in street corners, in parks, in people's backyards. And I told you the way the swindle would work. I told you they're going to do everything they can to get the government-funded heroin dens before the Seattle Supreme Court makes a decision on the initiative that you signed. And it's a joke of an idea that we even have to defend our right to vote against the government-funded heroin dens. I told you the swindle was to get the thing in place. I told you the swindle was to get it as fast as possible. So they're looking at an $8 million van. Originally reported as $2 million. It's more like $8 million. It will take $8 million per year. 14 new city employees to drive that van around or to park that van and care for that van. Now, I told you the way it will work. We're going to hear, well, we can't just have drug dealers dealing the drugs. The drugs would be unsafe. It might have fentanyl in it. Now we need to supply the drugs. They supply the drugs into our city, poor street people from around the United States of America. And guess what happens? Seattle gets more federal money. Guess what happens? Sally Bagshaw's buddies in the poverty pimping business get more money. Mike O'Brien's buddies in the homeless industrial complex get more walking around money. Everybody gets more walking around money except you.
As a city, we have no plan.
You do have a plan, Mike O'Brien. Then we get a higher count in the census, which gets us greater representation in Congress. Then we get even more federal monies and more people come along, and the problem is self-perpetuating. In East Hastings Street in Vancouver, record high overdoses. Record high overdose deaths. The data is clear. These things don't work. And up there, they're installing opioid vending machines. the scam, the swindle is this. It's money for power, power for money. The Bhagwan Sri Sawant says it's just business that does that. Never believe it. There can be no other conclusion but that this is all about power and corruption and stupidity, because no one can look at the East Hastings Street's data and say it helped. There are good people, decent people, fans of the show, friends of the show, who will say, well, wait a minute, the overdoses up there are from fentanyl. My dearest friends, my dearest ones, heroin is a business to cartels. Fentanyl is a new ingredient, a cheaper ingredient. There will be a new fentanyl. There already is. I just forget the name of it. They'll keep advancing this. Supplying the drugs will supply the death, will supply more misery. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH in the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Watching the left hyperventilate in preparation for the president's summit with Kim Jong-un, which begins in about 45 minutes. That next. Man, it's starting to look pretty good to become a heroin addict. I'm not saying, but why work? Sit around, state of drug-driven euphoria all day in your tiny house, stoned, ignoring the world. I mean, we got to start the delivery, right? You can't rely on the street people to go get their own drugs. Sally Bagshaw said, for the people who don't have money to buy the drugs, we got to buy it for them. Well, if we got to buy it for them, shouldn't we deliver this stuff? For God's sake, let's not be brutal. Some of these people are too high to go get it on their own. What if they're too high for the next fix? We got to have something to bring them down so they can enjoy the fix. And furthermore, while we're at this, why are we doing this only for heroin addicts? I know people who are addicted to meth. We got to light that up, buy the meth. The alcohol, that stuff's expensive. You gone and priced out some of that liquor they drink? Even the fortified wine, that's downright oppressive. We got to be handing that out. A lot of times you get on the wine and the heroin, you get addicted to sex. Well, I mean, I'm being told that there's that whole promotion about the notion that that sex work is good work. Have you seen these ads? Oh, it's called Turn Off the Blue Light. It's remarkably brutal. It's young women who are promoting prostitution as female empowerment. Well, since we're doing that, you got addicted to the heroin. That gets you on the meth. Now you can't work, so you're sitting in your tiny house all day. With your tiny house, you got your stolen bicycle parts. You're getting bored. It's all screwed up your neural responders in your brain, so your pleasure center's all messed up, which is one of the things that meth does. It destroys your pleasure center, so you can only engage in activity that should be pleasurable in a spiritual, marital sense. You can only do that when you're high, so then you're too stoned to go get the heroin, which means you're too stoned to go get a prostitute, so we got to deliver the prostitute. But then the prostitute is living a life that is destroying her soul. So she's probably going to be buried in pharmacological help to kind of not feel that. So then we got to deliver drugs for her as well, because it's not fair just to deliver it to her house, because she, of course, is out there, quote, working with clients. So at that point, then we got to get an Uber system to get it out, because you can't pretend these poor addicts can go get it on their own. Now, when you're doing all that, what's to stop you from getting hooked on gambling? If you get hooked on gambling, it's not like these people can afford to go purchase the, what do you call them at casinos? The players' cards? Is that what they're called? That you get to play with because they don't like the cash at the casinos? So we got to go hand out the players' cards. And once you're handing out the players' cards, it's not like you can be unstoned enough to drive out to the casinos. This is an addiction. Gambling, well, for some folks, is an addiction. So now we got to get one of these mobile vans so that people can get in an $85 million van this time, like 16 people at a time, be directly hooked up to a feed of heroin as they drive out to one of the casinos, player's card in hand, prostitute with them in bed or in their little shack area, whatever it is with inside the van. That takes them out to the casinos, but once they get there, you can't have them go in gambling stoned on heroin. Now you got to light them up. So then now we need to give out the speedballs so they can go in and be completely alert while they go gamble away the taxpayer money on the taxpayer-provided card that we've given them to go to the casinos. Now, at that point, let's not expect these people to go back to their hovel, the little tiny house that we've built for them to be able to do this. I mean, that's a long ride after you've been gambling all day. So we probably got to comp them a room at the casino. Now, once you're at the casino, you can't expect that they're going to not feed their habit that night. Now we got to get the drugs out to the casino. In other words, don't give a pig a pancake or a moose. What was the secondary book? Someone sent me the secondary book. Don't give a moose. Is it a melon? No, a moose wouldn't like a melon. Forget what it is. Don't give a moose a something. To the text lines, I have to pay for my caffeine fix every day. Where do I sign up for Taxpayer Set Me Up? JJ and Burien. Just call Bhagwan Shri Sawant. Todd, notice Bhagwan Shri Sawant mentions that people who don't have money to buy drugs. Is she aware that eventually no one has the money to buy drugs? A prince can go to popper very quickly once involved with heroin and meth. So essentially she's saying everyone. Oh, and on Twitter, people are creating a list of things that they want. I can't get going in the morning without coffee. And when I say coffee, I mean 3 to 4 cups. It's 2 before the gym, so I got to have that handed out to me. Can anyone see a proper ending to this? Can anyone see where this doesn't end in these things happening? Only if you stop them. Only if you keep punching a hole through the wall of stupid. Now, you know, the rant I just went on, you know what, Tom, do me a favor. I don't ever do this, but take that rant and put a date stamp on it. And I want to post that forever somewhere in the studio. And I want to have it printed out in a nice piece of paper. And that was a rant extemporaneous with a lot of input from listeners on the text line and Twitter at Toddy Herman at 800-465-8770. Brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. A lot of my ideas, a lot of the listeners. I want to put it up here, date stamped. And when those things come true, like we start delivering prostitutes to drug addicts, or we start delivering the drugs because they're stoned to go get them, I want to check those off so that we can have a calendar of when parity becomes reality in this city.
You want to keep updating that predictions?
Yeah, but what we'll do, I'm just going to sign these off with this here, with this, well, this is a black pen, but with a green pen. It's important that a pen be right.
Got to be green.
We had a complaint earlier about just a few more things. There's a gentleman who says the numbering is no longer enough. He needs the items color-coded. No, I'm kidding. See, we need him. He's getting very confused. Got him color-coded.
Got it.
All right, now, I promise, we'll come back. We'll get into North Korea, how the liberal media is treating this, particularly Ben Rhodes, which is sort of hilarious. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show. The Kim Jong-un motorcade is making its way to the meeting site. It's a bunch of buses that are white. And a lot of security, of course. I don't see his turlets. He travels with his own toilets. But I'm told that the vans, and in fact his cars, have toilets for him. I guess it's just bizarre. I mean, I can actually understand the reason for it, to be fully blunt. I can kind of get it. The most entertaining thing about this is all the things the media does that the media doesn't do. Do you remember how verboten it was to discuss Hillary's age and relative health? I mean, and this was before she started obviously wearing a back brace. And by the way, it's only funny because she pretends she's not. It's certainly not funny that a woman needs a back brace, but she needs a back brace. Just like she needed those glasses that I think were for stroke victims. Just like she left the stage and couldn't come back during the debates. Now she's where was it? She was in, where she was somewhere, it was like 80 degrees, and she was wearing like 6 to 7 layers of clothes, which is, I think, about 5 more layers than she normally wears. And she clearly had a back brace on. Remember when it was verboten to discuss these things? On MSNBC, Chris Jansing had an interesting question that sort of resets the rules of engagement, talking about the age of politicians.
Is it worth even bringing up, Victor, that the President of the United States turned 72 this week? We think Kim Jong-un is 34. Again, somebody who has been trained, who has come through a dynastic situation. Does that give him necessarily an advantage here?
Wait a minute. When Hillary was falling over during debates, you know, I think the difference between us and myself and Secretary Clinton, well, it's she's fallen over and cannot get up, and I am up and standing. And how old is Bernie Sanders? Well, he's this age. That was never questioned, but now it needs to be questioned. Now the media, this is no longer verboten. And I don't think Trump's wearing a back brace. I don't think he's fallen over. And I haven't seen him have to leave the debate stage for any reason. Now, second up in hilariousness is turning to Ben Rhodes. Think of the media here. We turn now to our national security foreign affairs correspondent Ben Rhodes. Ben, when you were in the Obama administration, you pretended a group of Iranian moderates had arisen in Iran and was demanding compromise. You called it an echo chamber that you had written about in the New York Times, given an interview that you had fooled the entire media establishment into believing the existence of these moderates. At the same time, as you used public taxpayer dollars to affect an election in Israel. And as to add to that, you also at the same time were using monies with groups like the Plowshare Foundation to pay for fake polling to show that the Iranians supported this and so did the Americans. So the question today for you, Ben Rhodes, is it a right-wing government problem in South Korea that's stopping progress with North Korea?
With North Korea, what was different for us was two things. One, we had a right-wing government in South Korea the whole time that we were in office. And I think people fail to appreciate how much the fact of this diplomacy is tied to President Moon more than anybody else. He really wants to make this happen.
And that's everything this man says in the mainstream media should be followed by a laugh track. Every word he speaks should be followed with the laugh track from Three's Company. Don't even invest in a good laugh track. Just get the Three's Company laugh track. How in the name of anything holy do people in the news business look at that guy and sit next to him and act like he is even capable of telling the truth when it comes to issues regarding Obama versus Trump or in anything to do with his time under Obama, anything to do? The creator of the Benghazi lie, the creator of the fake moderates, etc. ad nauseum on ABC. On ABC, we're reminded that we Americans, all of us have ADD or ADHD. And as a nation, we can't wait. We just want stuff now. Right?
There are some doubters out here. That is true. Most told me they are excited that this summit is taking place. They have been living with this conflict for 65 years. They all admit Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump are equally unpredictable, but they do not believe that shaking hands and talking in Singapore could make it any worse. But we have to remember that Korean cultures have more patience than ours. People here in Seoul don't expect a quick solution. This summit, they believe, is the beginning of something that they just never expected.
And tell me all the people here. Tell me all the people in the United States are going, you know, Bob, I've been watching that thing going on down there in the, you know, the summit. And I think we may have a deal today by the end of the day. Jerry, you ain't kidding me. I'll tell you, I look at international diplomacy. First thing I think is we'll probably cut a deal within the day. You guys couldn't be more right. I think it'll happen within the first hour. First hour, they're going to have an agreement. Second hour, we'll go out and do nuclearized North Korea. Third hour, we're going to be opening up a Taco Bell and a Wendy's. And that's how the media portrays us versus the Koreans. Are they more patient? I don't know. But I know I've yet to meet anybody here going, yeah, this deal's going to be perfect, done instantly. This conversation begins in 41 minutes. With the president and Kim Jong-un. Lastly, to be even funnier, George Steffi Stephanopoulos. Didn't he work for Bill Clinton? Didn't he support Barack Obama? Didn't Barack Obama go out and put us on the other side of the war against terror, effectively, by aligning us with Iran?
What a turn of events. Seeking peace with enemies, picking fights with friends. Donald Trump promised to do things in a brand new way, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now.
So when Barack Obama saddled on up to Iran and he said, look, it's illegal for me to send you pallets of cash, so let me send you pallets of cash, but let me do it at night and let me fly it over in American currency, which will be switched out into foreign currency, brought to you as pallets. Now, we can't say this was an exchange for freeing the hostages. So can you wait 10 minutes after you get the money to send us the hostages? Oh, and by the way, yes, we'll give you access to our banking system. That's also pretty much illegal. We'll give you that access, but don't tell anybody. Oh, the thing with you guys, you know, using Hezbollah to smuggle drugs into the United States. Yeah, don't worry. I have a lot more leeway. I was telling Vladimir Putin's guy the day earlier, I have a lot more leeway now. I'll shut down that investigation. You guys continue to bring the cocaine and the meth through the southern border in the human trafficking tunnels. Because one thing we want is Hezbollah to have a really good working knowledge of how the tunnels on our southern border work. We want you to be well practiced. We want you to know the coyotes. We want you to be able to get in and out of the country as you please. So I will shut down this 3-year investigation to crack down on Hezbollah bringing cocaine into the country. In other words, I will obstruct justice on your behalf. Now, what did George Stephanopoulos just say about the president?
What a turn of events. Seeking peace with enemies, picking fights with friends. Donald Trump promised to do things in a brand new way, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now.
He's saying things in a brand new way. I mean, doing things in a brand new way. Pallets of cash at midnight or 2 a.m. and let Hezbollah bring cocaine into the country. Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. George W. Bush. He let Hezbollah, of course, bring cocaine into the country through the tunnels. My bad. Sometimes you do a little bit too much radio, you forget those things. So there you go. 17, 18 minutes now. The president will sit down and have a discussion with Kim Jong-un. There is now breaking news. Larry Kudlow is the president's economic advisor. Larry Kudlow has suffered a heart attack. The president has just tweeted this, just being reported by the media. So our prayers for Larry Kudlow, our prayers for his family. Don't know the seriousness of this yet, but we'll try to track that. Larry Kudlow, you know him from CNBC. He's got a big history before that of economic expertise. That makes me sad. I like Larry Kudlow, and I hope he's okay. All right, Todd Herman Show will continue on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Special hello to the people listening on podcasts and around the country. Appreciate you very much. And to Western Washington, aren't we living the dream with the weather the way it is supposed to be this coming week? We'll see what happens. And a personal note tonight, what is the thing that when you do, you become young? What is the thing, that the activity you undertake that changes your age? There's a couple things for me. One of them is playing with kids. When I have an opportunity to really play with little kids, or even like my daughter and her cousins, if they're in a playful mood, or like around the lake cabin, going and jumping off the dock and throwing the kids off the dock. And to my nephew, yes, I can still throw you. Doubt me at your peril. I can probably throw you further now than last year, even though you're bigger. Doubt me? I love those moments of losing yourself in play. When you, as an adult, are as into it as the kids, playing hide-and-go-seek, or then going out and doing things like, having the marshmallows and stuff at the campfire. Even though I don't eat the marshmallows, I eat the hot dogs. I'll eat the heck out of the hot dogs. I love those moments. There are some times when you can observe this happen to other people. Some of my most meaningful moments in life have been watching people become younger in minutes. My mother's husband, who passed on a few years ago, he was a guy who aged pretty quickly. And he was a guy who was pretty sensitive to pain. And everybody has different pain tolerances. Dear, dear man, and a gentle, wonderful, wonderful man who was a little bit decrepit in his older age, right? And weakened, except when he danced. When my wife and I got married, John and my mother taught us how to dance, because neither of us have formally danced. And they taught us how to do simple things like the waltz, which was our main dance at our wedding. And John, who had trouble walking and sometimes lost his balance, when the music came on, he was John, fleet of foot, able to dance beautifully, able to turn my mom in all those fancy ways that great dancers do. John had achieved some fame in his country, in Denmark, by becoming a nationally recognized dancer. And in those moments, when the music came on, John was that person again. And so fleet of foot that you would think you were looking at a 30-year-old man. My mother and he danced so well together that it put my wife and I to shame, although we did learn to waltz with their great help. The other time that I've seen this happen is there was a gentleman named Les May. And if you grew up in Spokane, you may remember the name. He was a brilliant race car driver. He was legendary. He raced the Canadian American Racing Association series. Those are the cars that are like Indy cars, right? Open wheels and wings and these incredible cars. And I grew up watching Les. Man, the man was just unbelievably aggressive and smart. He's a guy who could fit a car into a place a car should not go. Like, you're not going to make it, not going to make it, made it. Sort of Les's style. I saw him crash multiple times, terrible crashes multiple times. Saw him get out, wave at the crowd, and go on. I never got to race against Les because Les brutally hurt himself before I got to race in the strangest of ways. He did not strap himself in properly to his three-point harness. He didn't strap the lower part. Crash came. Les moved forward and cracked his back really bad. Wasn't able to race anymore. When I did see him get out of his car, though, as a young man, and I saw him after this race, he wanted to go get his autograph. He took his helmet off, set it down, and he became an old man. Like, on the spot. He aged. Now, I saw all the effects of all the crashes. Now, I saw all of the pain that he'd suffered, you know, as a result of these years of racing. And as I understand it, also hard farm work. And I even as a little kid, I looked at that, wow, how can that be the same man? But when I went back in the pits as a young man, and I was with my dad, and I saw Les getting ready to race, it was as if he became younger on the spot. It's as if a 50, 60-year-old, hard-living dude suddenly became a 25-year-old kid, jumping into his car, basically leaping into his car, putting on the helmet fast, smiling, and again, fleet of feet, motion filled with grace and excitement. And the last one I saw was with the greatest wrestling coach in history. Well, and I guess there's some debate now with that about Cale Sanderson. Dan Gable was a guy who would enter a room, and he was a legendary wrestler. Lost one match, I think, in his life. He would enter a room, and people still talk about this. Coach Gable's still alive. He would enter a room kind of bunched up. Kind of creaky joints. I mean, wouldn't you be with years and years and years and years wrestling and then wrestling as a coach and being an older man wrestling all these Olympians and national champions? And you could look at him and you'd see a small, kind of crinkled up, creaky old man. And it really, literally, until he would walk into a room full of wrestlers, particularly if they were wrestling. And when his feet touched the mat, you could see almost that Willy Wonka moment. Remember that in Gene Wilder's portrayal of Willy Wonka? He comes out. He's with his cane. And he's frail. And then Hackman did this brilliant thing where he rolls forward and pops up. And you realize, oh, he's young. He's excited. That was Gable. When he would step into a room full of wrestlers and his feet touched the mat, he lost 40 years. He was 20 again. What is the thing that brings you to that point where you're young, holding a baby? Sometimes that does it. Why did you stop? Why have you stopped pursuing that? Why have you allowed age to take that from you? Why have I? My daughter's growing up, but I guess I could go play with kids, right? I mean, there's plenty of kids who need an older brother, right? I guess I could go learn to dance. Like my mom danced with her husband. My wife loves to dance. I'd love to be able to turn her around and spin her around. Get back into racing. You know, for me, guitar, working out, doing this. Yeah, doing this. Something I dreamt of as a little kid. And I'm doing it right now. I do it because of you. Would you text me? 800-465-8770, please. Tell me the thing that keeps you young. And why have you stopped doing it? This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.